from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Friday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss, and so glad to have you joining us today. As we head into this long Memorial Day weekend, both chambers of Congress will be out of session next week. So when Congress returns in June, one of the priorities that many House Republicans will be involved with is a contempt of Congress charge for Attorney General Merrick Garland.
I am very disappointed. The Justice Department, as I've explained before, has gone to extraordinary lengths to accommodate the legitimate interests of the committees. I have released the full and unredacted report of Mr. Herr.
Well, that was Garland's attempt yesterday to explain why he's defied a congressional subpoena. I'll be talking about that and our ongoing border and other issues with Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs, who's a member of the House Judiciary Committee, here in just a few moments. And earlier today, the United Nations International Criminal Court of Justice issued a ruling. Catch this. Their ruling states that Israel must suspend its military operation in Rafah. Wow. As much of the world is turning its back on Israel, among the crimes that they're being accused of is a lack of food for Gazan civilians. But research from Columbia University Business School professor Ron Kivitz demonstrates that Hamas bears the responsibility for any lack of aid that's getting to civilians in Gaza. And he will be joining me to talk about that a little bit later in the program. And just yesterday, some encouraging legislation passed in Louisiana to reclassify abortion pills, mifepristone and misoprostol, as dangerous controlled substances. Well, could this be a model for other states to follow? I'll be talking about that with the bill's sponsor, Louisiana State Senator Thomas Presley, a little bit later. And as children today face an onslaught of messages that run counter to biblical truth, how can parents and grandparents guide young people and raise spiritual champions? What are some of the cornerstones that are necessary for building a biblical worldview? Well, author and researcher Dr. George Barna will be joining me a little bit later on the program to discuss this. And just a reminder, last week the House of Representatives passed the Israel Security Assistance Support Act, which in essence rebukes President Biden for withholding weapons from Israel for their war against Hamas. And we have an action item for you to sign a petition and help all of us together have a united voice calling on the Biden administration to stop delaying these weapons shipments to Israel. You have two options to join this petition. First of all, you can simply text the word AID to 67742. That's A-I-D, AID, to 67742, or you can go to our website, frcaction.org/aid. Either way, we ask you to jump on board and help us send a voice to the Biden administration. All right, we've got a packed program coming your way. You don't want to miss any of it, but if by chance you do miss a portion, you can catch it at our website, tonyperkins.com, and also there's tons of information there available for you. All right, let's jump into the topics for today. We begin with this. The reports of two Jordanian nationals who attempted to breach the Marine Corps base in Quantico, Virginia. It's obviously drawn increased scrutiny from Congress as new details are emerging in this case. In fact, details that were initially concealed from the public. And all of this, I would remind you, is coming at the same time that Senate Democrats yesterday failed to pass a messaging bill that they were trying to push that pretends to strengthen border security and would have allowed the Biden administration to claim that Republicans are the one that they've blocked efforts to address this crisis. We've got much to discuss, and joining me now to talk about this and much more is Congressman Andy Biggs. He serves on two extremely important committees, the House Judiciary Committee and the Oversight and Accountability Committee. He represents the 5th Congressional District of the great state of Arizona. Congressman Biggs, always great to see you, my friend. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, my good friend, Congressman Heiss. Glad to be with you.
Well, it's an honor to have you, and in advance, hope you and your family have a wonderful Memorial Day. But let's get into this. We continue to see week after week after week the results of the failed border crisis of this administration. Talk about, if you will, the national security issues that this failed border policy has created.
Well, so this thing where you have two Jordanians going to Quantico, allegedly trying to break in, it highlights what happens when you have literally millions of people who illegally come into the country, and we're dispersing them everywhere. I just was watching multiple clips earlier today of the border within the last 36 hours, and you have people from Iran coming in. You have people from Turkey coming in. You have people from every country coming in, and they don't all have good intentions toward our nation, right? A lot of them have been steeped and indoctrinated against this country. They don't share our values. They don't share our culture, but they're coming in, and some of them have malicious intent. So I think it's really interesting that the oversight we're doing now is because the federal government's not doing enough oversight to monitor our borders. So we have to monitor the monitors, if you will. And that's really a dangerous situation for a free constitutional republic when you don't have a border.
Well, you've been a leading voice on this issue for a couple of years now. In fact, you and I have made several trips to the border ourselves. And last time, in fact, we were there in one particular part, the day before, there were four Middle Easterns who were apprehended right there. And the question is, why were they coming? What was their attempts? Who knows how many thousands of people like this? You serve on the Judiciary Committee. Chairman Jim Jordan and yourself and others on the committee have been demanding answers from Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. What are you hoping to learn in these attempts to get some answers?
Well, we want to know, first of all, will they admit that their policy is causing national security threats? And right now, Secretary Mayorkas actually said within the last 7 days that he didn't think it did. He thought the policy was fine. So we have to push him on that. But the second thing is, we need to find out how many people are illegally in the country. And just so you know, Jody, the Tucson sector is the number one sector for human trafficking and drug trafficking. These are people coming in between the border that are getting away. These people do not necessarily want to be caught. They're not surrendering like you see in a lot of places. These people are coming in camo. They're carrying backpacks. They're doing everything they possibly can. So we want to find out what the interdiction is going to be and what the plans are. And they have no plans whatsoever to even stop this because they don't think it's a problem, which is eyebrow raising.
It really is. And it's amazing to me, even hearing you again talk about Mayorkas saying their policies are fine. It's not creating any problems whatsoever. So on the one hand, they say everything's fine, everything's good. But just yesterday, Democrat Senates are trying to pass a messaging bill blaming the border crisis on Republicans. So they're all over the map. In fact, that I want to play this clip for you from White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre earlier this week, where she herself is also joining this game, trying to pass blame. Play clip two, please.
The president has the authority to do something about this unilaterally. Congress is in a divided government right now. Why isn't he doing anything?
Well, why should he have to do it unilaterally? Why should we do it in a legislative way? And let's not forget that negotiating. So you're right. He took many executive actions before. But in order to deal with what's happening at the border, in order to deal with a broken immigration system, you need law. You need legislation.
So we don't have any laws saying what should happen on the border?
Yeah. Jody, this is what I keep telling people. Title 8 has not been repealed. Title 8 is the law that governs border security. This president, within 36 hours, issued 93 executive orders to undo our secure border. He did that January 20th to 21st, 2021. And now that it's an 80-20 issue in an election coming up, and the entire country's been affected negatively by a policy that he is, just stridently adhered to, he's now coming along and saying it's the Republicans' fault and they need to do something. But the bottom line is he did it by executive order. He has all the authorities right now to close down the border. There are specific statutory authorities given to him to close the border when he deems that there's a security issue. He refuses to do that. It is all on Joe Biden. He knows it, and the American people know it.
Absolutely. Not to mention the untold number of other laws that they're just not abiding by. I mean, you've got the executive orders undoing so much, but then we still have tons of laws that are just being ignored and swept under the rug. It could be the solution possibly would be a new administration in November. That would probably help things. Let me shift gears a little bit on you. When Congress returns here in June and a couple of weeks after the recess, one of the top items is obviously going to be the contempt of Congress resolution against Attorney General Merrick Garland. How serious is his failure to respond to the congressional subpoena? This is a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it and why I've been advocating for Speaker Johnson to do this sooner rather than later is if we don't hold Merrick Garland in contempt, it will basically undermine the Congress's constitutional responsibility to oversee the executive branch agencies that we fund. Think about that. What he's doing, he'd be thumbing his nose in our face. It's kind of like Eric Holder. Eric Holder really set the standard. Lois Lerner, these people set the standard, and now you see it happening where executive branch agencies are refusing to provide us with information. This is vital information that we need for actually our legislative purpose, but it will undermine any Congress going forward vis-a-vis any executive administration going forward. That means they're going to be able to say, we're going to rely on the Merrick Garland pattern or the Eric Holder pattern or the Lois Lerner pattern where you get a contempt citation and nothing happens. In this instance, we aren't even taking it to the floor yet.
Unbelievable. Real quickly, we've got less than a minute, but you've introduced a resolution condemning the ICC's arrest warrant on Prime Minister Netanyahu. Why is this such an important issue for Congress to respond real quickly?
Because the ICC is not legitimate. It is trying to invade our sovereign authority or Israel's sovereign authority, and we didn't ratify that as part of a treaty. And the reality is the ICC is an illegitimate multilateral institution, in my opinion. I happened to be there in the Rome conference when this was being formed, fighting for pro-life NGOs. But the reality is, Jody, we have got to put our foot down and say no. Otherwise, you never know what sovereign state's going to be invaded next by ICC.
Thank you, Congressman Andy Biggs. Always great to see you. Best to you and your family. Have a great weekend. All right, friends, after the break, Columbia University Business School professor Ron Kivitz joins me to talk about what's happening in Israel and the crimes, so-called, that have been committed. What the media is telling you is not completely accurate. Stay tuned. We'll cover it after the break.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss, Senior Vice President here at FRC. Glad to have you joining us this evening. All right, earlier today, the United Nations International Criminal Court of Justice declared that Israel must suspend its military operation in Rafah. As you just heard from Congressman Biggs, this court does not even have the means to enforce such orders. They don't have jurisdiction, but this ruling nonetheless does represent how isolated Israel has become on the world stage as it's literally fighting for its existence. International officials continue to accuse Israel of creating famine conditions in Gaza, even as research demonstrates that the root cause of suffering in Gaza is Hamas. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Columbia University Business School Professor Ron Kivitz, who has conducted research into this issue. Professor Kivitz, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Well, thank you. All right, let's jump into this. The United Nations claims that there's a famine in Gaza, but what is the actual situation on the ground?
Thank you first for having me with you. I appreciate it very much. Obviously, in a war zone, you will have disruptions of food supply and so on. But analysis that Professor Fredergruen from Columbia University and myself have done using data, including data from the UN, in fact, shows that at least in terms of supply, the amount of food that is being supplied into Gaza by Israel, by the United States, by the Egyptians, including local production, the amount of food supply is sufficient. And in fact, if you compare the amount of food per capita, per individual that is being supplied into Gaza compared to the average food consumption in Asia and Africa, which is where Gaza is located, it's even higher in Gaza.
So what is the problem then? Because I mean, we've been researching, I've been looking at this and attending some meetings on this subject as well. I'm sure much of it is drawn from your research and what you've come up with. But the role of Hamas, let me just put that out there, in creating supply chain issues, is that what's happening here?
That's part of what's happening, absolutely. First, I've not seen, and I don't think we're seeing evidence of famine, of widespread starvation, heaven forbid, or famine in Gaza. There's just no, I've not seen, I don't think we're seeing any evidence for that.
Let me pause you right there. Let me pause if I can, because that's the story. That's the narrative that's being put out there. Who is behind this push that famine is taking place and that Israel is responsible when, just as you said, in reality, famine is not taking place and part of the supply chain problem is Hamas?
Part of the supply chain problem absolutely is Hamas. Part of it is a war with the chaos in war, but part of it is Hamas, which has been hoarding and stealing food, which has been firing at the entry points, in fact, killing some Israeli soldiers in some of the entry points where food is being provided from, and disrupting the food supply, firing or other terrorist organizations at the U.S. Based port that is being built off the Gaza coast. But to your question about who is propagating or creating the story of famine, obviously Hamas is interested in that. The UN, unfortunately, is part of that. They use data that Hamas is providing. The data is wrong. The same is done, by the way, with the number of casualties, the number of deaths. Unfortunately, people are dying, but the numbers are that the UN is relying on are provided or manufactured by Hamas, and then the UN just last week issued a correction. And so the notion of a famine in Gaza that we've seen no evidence for, and I don't think there is one actually, is being created, this idea, by, in fact, the mass media or the commercial or mainstream media, by the UN and by Hamas. In fact,
so just so Hamas really is incentivized then to block food and aid, particularly if they are able to manipulate the media and the UN to blame it on Israel.
Hamas has an absolute incentive. It is obvious. I think a third grade student, they shouldn't be thinking about such terrible things, but I think a third grade student would understand. Hamas has an absolute incentive to create stories of famine and starvation and deaths. In fact, I would say Hamas has an incentive and has been creating shortages of food and deaths. They're using the Gazan civilians as a shield, a human shield for them. And in fact, the more civilians who die in Gaza, the better Hamas is off, because they want Israel to stop. They want to, after have conducted their terrible atrocities, they want to escape this and still remain in power. And in fact, you can see with the recent decisions by the by the ICJ, by the International Court of Justice, the International Court Criminal Court, these are really travesty of courts. Hamas is getting what it wants. I see my Zoom is slowing down here, and I apologize for that.
No problem. Let me ask you, our time is almost up, and I can't thank you enough, Professor, for coming on. But while I have you, just real quickly, you teach there at Columbia University, which, of course, has become the heart of anti-Semitic campus demonstrations. Have they settled down there? How's the situation from your perspective in about 30 seconds?
Yeah, I appreciate the question so much. Now, after the graduations and the interruptions in graduations and the terrible year that we've had at Columbia, it's quiet for the summer. If the administration at Columbia, and not only at Columbia, does not take actions now, appropriate actions, everything will come back starting in September. And what we have seen at Columbia is not just anti-Semitism. We have seen decades of anti-American incitement in the classrooms, in the undergraduate. Israel and the Jews are just an excuse for them. Yep. Really what's going on is education for Marxism against the United States and, of course, against American allies.
We're going to have to leave it right there. Thank you so much, Professor Ron Kievitz from Columbia University Business School. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. All right, friends, after the break, an encouraging story of legislation passed in Louisiana accurately classifying abortion pills. I'll talk to the sponsor of that legislation right after the break, so stay tuned.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss. I'm so honored to have you on board with us. All right, yesterday we got some good news. Lawmakers in Louisiana passed some legislation to designate the abortion pills mifepristone and misoprostol as dangerous controlled substances that are illegal to possess without a prescription. Wow. The legislation now awaits the signature of course, pro-life Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry. But by becoming the first state in the nation to pass this kind of legislation, the question is, could Louisiana provide literally a model for pro-life lawmakers in other states? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Louisiana State Senator Tom Presley, who is the sponsor of that legislation. He represents the 38th District of Louisiana. Senator Presley, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to have you on board.
Thank you so much for having me on. And actually, while we were sitting here preparing to go on to the show, the governor did go ahead and sign this legislation into law. So it is the law of the land in Louisiana and becomes effective on October the 1st of this year. So we're excited.
That is awesome.
Absolutely.
Awesome news. Congratulations. And so thrilled to be able to report that very first great news regarding this bill here on Washington Watch. But well, again, congratulations, Senator. This is a huge piece of legislation. Why was this? Let me start with this. Why is this such an important issue to you?
Yeah, so my sister was the victim of a horrible domestic violence attack where her then husband tried to poison her 7 times with misoprostol. They were going through some marital issues. And he decided to obtain some misoprostol, crushed it up, put it in a drink. Catherine was fortunate enough to realize what was going on the first time that it happened. She was able to take the abortion reversal pill, and able to save the life of my now 22-month-old niece, thank God, who is alive and doing remarkably well considering the circumstances that she underwent during the first trimester of pregnancy. But it was a personal issue for me, and I'm very grateful for my sister being willing to share her story in an effort to try to help other women from having this horrible attack happen to them.
Wow, what a powerful story. And please send our regards to your sister for giving the freedom for that story to be told. You know, there's so much fear-mongering from the abortion industry about this legislation. Some tell us it's no more dangerous than Advil or some other similar drug. But how have these criticisms literally missed the mark? I mean, you just gave a powerful personal example, but this is a huge problem across the board.
Oh, it truly is. And misoprostol, look, is used for a variety of healthcare needs. My goal in this is certainly not to get in the way of the physician-woman relationship and patient relationship, but rather to ensure that we are protecting life. And in Louisiana, abortion is not allowed. It is illegal across the board for elective abortions. But these pills, as we discussed, have been used for reasonable and other healthcare needs that are legitimate. So that was not our goal, was an outright ban. Rather, we were trying to make sure that it was only being used for legitimate healthcare. And I think putting it into Schedule 4 is the right spot for striking that balance while going after and having the ability to go after bad actors. We're also allowing the healthcare professionals to do their job and ensure that these pills are being used in a proper way that is not for elective abortion.
Yeah, I think it's a great step in the right direction. I mean, look, we all know that these pills are harmful to babies. I mean, they end the life of babies. But how the abortion industry and the FDA has failed to convey the harmful outcome and consequences potentially for mothers is a whole nother issue. And that's really what you have addressed in all of this. Let me just end with this question. How can other states follow Louisiana's lead on this extremely important issue? Do you think that will happen?
I sure hope so. I mean, I think when you look at the risk to the public, like you said, I mean, not only to the unborn babies, but also to the mothers who could be poisoned with these pills, as my sister was. I mean, her case was in Harris County, Texas, in the Houston area. And unfortunately, the DA down there agreed to a plea deal, which sentenced my brother-in-law to 180 days in jail for trying to kill his unborn baby six times and causing a medical emergency to my sister. It's untenable that we don't do more to protect women and protect the unborn in these situations. Again, these pills will continue to be allowed to be used for legitimate healthcare reasons that are outside of abortion, but we've got to put more protections in place, and that's exactly what we did in Louisiana, and I hope that other states will continue to follow our lead on that.
Are you hearing so far, Senator Presley, from any other states or others kind of reaching out to you after this bill is passed? And now I probably, since the governor signed it, you may be hearing more later, but any initial responses from other state leaders?
I have not had any responses from other state leaders at this point, but we've, you know, it's certainly been a headline in the newspaper. The left is certainly leaning in on trying to pass this in a way that is absolutely not accurate or truthful, and trying to make us look like we're not caring for women and not allowing these pills that have, again, legitimate healthcare reasons in the case of misoprostol for being prescribed that are outside of elective abortion. And I want that to be very clear that we are not taking that away. We're simply saying that it should be a doctor that's making the prescription and allowing it to move forward when it's not for abortion. But in Louisiana, we do not allow abortion.
Well, extremely well done. Hats off to you, Senator Thomas Presley, Louisiana. Thank you. All right, friends, after the break, George Barna will join me to discuss how parents and grandparents can raise spiritual champions. Stay tuned.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Glad to have you joining us this evening on Washington Watch. Welcome back. I'm Jody Heiss, your Friday host, and it's an honor to be with you. Let me give you, just by way of reminder, and I know many of you are aware of this, you're praying for this, in fact, but the World Health Assembly is just a few days away from beginning to meet, and time is running out for each of us to tell Washington not to let the Biden administration cede our authority to the World Health Organization, to cede our national sovereignty. For more information on how you can help make your voice known, please visit our website, frcaction.org/who, frcaction.org/who, or you can simply text the word WHO to 67742. All right, research continues to reveal that the foundational beliefs that are held by America's preteen children is really putting them on track to abandon biblical Christianity in record numbers. These are troubling belief patterns, and they stem from young people rejecting core Christian beliefs, beliefs regarding things like the Bible, absolute truth, the means to salvation, their purpose in life, the meaning of success, and a host of other things. So how can Christian parents and grandparents address this crisis, and how can they raise children with a biblical worldview? Well, I don't know of anyone more equipped to help us answer that question than my next guest. Joining me now is George Barna. He's the Director of Research at Arizona Christian University and research senior research fellow here at FRC's Center for Biblical Worldview. He's the author of many books, most recently, Raising Spiritual Champions. Folks, this is a need we need to hear. Dr. Barna, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always an honor to have you.
Hey, Jody, good to be with you again.
Oh, well, listen, this is a topic that you are passionate about. I've heard you many times. We were in a meeting just a couple of weeks ago together, and you have done enormous research that really has put forth so many details of this book. Can you kind of outline the extent of the problem that we're looking at in this upcoming generation?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty simple. We know that a person's worldview is developed between 15 to 18 months of age and the age of 13. And that worldview is pretty much going to define who they are, how they live, what kind of experiences they have, the lifestyle they adopt, all these things and more. Worldview is so critical because every decision that every person makes, every moment of their life, flows through their worldview. So they've got a lot of choices of what worldview to adopt or what elements from various worldviews to adopt. And what our research has consistently shown is that children are not being pointed in the direction of developing a biblical worldview. In other words, a decision-making filter that's based on biblical truth. Instead, what they're doing is they're adopting the ways of the world. And part of the reason for that is because their parents love them and they want them to succeed in life. But toward that end, they're not necessarily setting them up to develop a biblical worldview. And even when they go to churches, in most cases, most of our churches are not exposing the children in those churches to biblical worldview teaching. And so what happens is they wind up adopting what the media offers to them, what schools are offering to them, and what their friends are suggesting to them. And that's not in their best interest. What they wind up doing is becoming syncretists, which means that they've
And I want to get into that.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to get into that because you introduced that a couple of weeks ago when we were together, and I want to get back to that. But you put your finger on the issue. It begins in the family with parents being more concerned with being financially successful rather than spiritually successful, and the lack of biblical worldview teaching in our churches. An enormous problem. It's just huge. But you address this in the book, Raising Spiritual Champions, where in there you outline seven cornerstones of a biblical worldview. I think this is so critical. Could you please kind of walk us through these essential cornerstones of worldview development from a biblical perspective?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, just to explain what they are, there are seven very basic biblical beliefs that form the foundation of a biblical worldview. They're not a complete biblical worldview, but it's a solid foundation that you can build upon. And what I discovered in our research is people who have a biblical worldview, by and large, own these seven things as part of who they are, part of their identity. If you believe deeply in all seven of these things, you have an 83% probability of having a biblical worldview. If you reject even one of these seven, that drops to just a 2% probability. So they're critically important. They're simple. It's believing that God exists and that he's all-knowing, he's all-powerful, he's loving, he's just, he's merciful, he wants to be involved in your life. Secondly, recognizing that when we're born into sin. We become sinners, and that sin has dramatic consequences for our lives. Thirdly, the antidote to that sin problem is Jesus Christ. He died on that cross, an unjust and painful death, solely because he loves us. He wants to save us from the punishment that's due to our sin nature and our sin choices. So Jesus really has got to be a critical part of our lives. The fourth element is recognizing that there is absolute moral truth. And fifthly, connected to that, we can find that truth out by going to the scriptures. The Bible is the place where God tells us what truth is. He is the embodiment of truth, but then he's kind of downloaded it, decoded that for us in the pages of Scripture. So if we want to know what truth is, and truth is the only thing that is going to help us to be set free from the world and from our sin and whatnot, we've got to understand what the Bible says about that. A sixth of the cornerstones has to do with the fact that every one of us has a purpose to our life that God has given to all of us in common. Now, there's a more succinct purpose that he has for each one of us that we can know through our gifting and other things. But all of us are here on earth for one general purpose, and that's to know, love, and serve God with all our heart, mind, strength, and soul. And then the seventh of these cornerstones is to recognize that we are only successful in life when we become consistently obedient to his teachings. And so when you put those seven things together, that's not the totality of how to live a holy and righteous life. But man, does it put you on the road to that in a great way.
It really does. And hearing you walk through this, it just seems so basic. These are elementary principles that once were widely embraced in American culture. In fact, for a long, long time, it's just probably over the last 50 years or so that these things have started to fall away from us, and now they seem virtually foreign to us as a culture. In fact, there's great hostility to these things, but these are basic biblical principles. Do you agree?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, the night that I discovered these things from pouring through the data and putting different things together, I thought, oh, my gosh, when I describe this to pastors and youth leaders and children's pastors, they're going to laugh at me and say, come on, that's Sunday School 101. And that's exactly right. But the reality is not many people go to Sunday school anymore, not many children. And these are not the things that they're learning there. So if we could get back to that traditional Sunday School 101 kind of teaching where people got this kind of bedrock information, the real solid foundation on which to begin building a deeper faith, yeah, it would make a world of difference.
Wow. Yeah, and it was stunning to me, the statistic you gave prior to discussing those seven cornerstones, is that if one of them are missing, it only drops to a 2% likelihood of embracing a biblical worldview. That's stunning. So bottom line, Christians, we can't pick and choose which of these cornerstones to recognize. We can't say, I like this one, but I don't like that one. I mean, your research reveals that the typical American adult is going to adopt beliefs and behaviors, and children, as you mentioned earlier, going to adopt beliefs and behaviors from multiple different worldviews, distinct worldviews. And you referred to it a while ago, and I want to come back to this. We're basically talking about people, if they reject a biblical worldview, then they're going to just choose from a hodgepodge of often contradictory type philosophies and worldviews. And you said this is syncretism. Go down that path. Explain this for us a little bit more.
Well, understand everybody has a worldview. You have to have a worldview to get through the day, because the worldview is your filter through which you make all your decisions. You're going to make decisions. And so we've got to figure out how to do that. And that's what our worldview enables us to do. But the reality is that it's our choice of what worldview to follow. Now, we don't typically have a strategic, intentional, consistent process for helping people to develop a worldview. It almost happens spontaneously, randomly, and you know, circumstantially. And so we're in a situation where our research is showing the average American combines 9 different worldviews to get to their own customized worldview. They're drawing ideas from many different places: postmodernism, secular humanism, Eastern mysticism, Wicca, Satanism, you know, a lot of different worldviews, Marxism, and putting them together into a customized blend that makes us feel comfortable, that makes us feel secure or safe, that we see other people adopting, so we know it's popular, so we're not going to get pushback for it. All these different things are contributing to the personal worldview that we develop. Now, the thing that we want to see happen is that we recognize, but those aren't based on truth. Those are based primarily on emotion and circumstance. And so they can change willy-nilly. What we really want people to do is to recognize there's a source of unchanging truth. That is God. God defines truth. We want to be aligned with that truth because it honors and glorifies him, but it's also in our best interests. That's how we bless him, but then he blesses us when we are in compliance with or in harmony with his truths. And so that's what a biblical worldview helps us to do, is to understand what is God's truth, how can we live according to it, and through that honor and glorify him, advance his kingdom, and be blessed in the process. It's a win-win situation.
Well, you mentioned these nine different worldviews that are inundating us and constantly changing. So you've got this process philosophy idea where everything is in process and culture just kind of goes along with all that is being thrown at it. Is there a predominant place that these competing worldviews are coming from? Is it the media? Is it education? Is it, is there a place that parents need to say, I need to pay special attention to this area and what my family, my children are hearing?
Yeah, Jody, we find that it's really the arts and entertainment media that are dominating this space in our culture. They are the ones that are producing the worldview in the minds and the hearts and the souls of our children. Our kids are spending so much time with the media, and basically it's unsupervised time. There's no kind of oversight that's being given to our children to understand, wait, you were just exposed to Marxist ideology. It's false. Let me explain what that is and why that is and what an alternative, a biblical alternative is to that concept that was just put at you in a piece of entertainment. And this is the insidious part of this process, is that it's while we're being entertained that we're growing our worldview. All these messages are being given to us in entertainment vehicles, whether it's video games, movies, television, music, books. There's so many different media vehicles that are teaching Americans worldview. That's the job
of
parents.
It's the job of parents. So let's land the plane on this this point here. We've only got about a minute or so left. The issue has to be resolved. Your book, Raising Spiritual Champions, where can people get it? And in about a 60 seconds, top line, what would you say to parents?
Well, I'd say that the only people that make disciples are disciples. So number one, as a parent, you've got to be a disciple if you want your child to be followers of Jesus. And then secondly, recognize that biblically, it's your dominant responsibility in life. This may be the most important thing you ever do in your life, is to raise your child to be an ardent follower of Jesus Christ. Make them a disciple. You can't give what you don't have, so you've got to get there. Know these seven cornerstones, build on them, then share that with your children through the relationship that you have with them. Spend more time on this than you do on sports, than you do on shopping, than you do on hobbies, than you do on watching movies and TV together. It's the most important thing that you're ever going to do. Do it well.
Dr. George Barna, thank you so much. Incredible research and a wealth of information. I encourage everyone to get a copy of this most recent book and these seven cornerstones. They're huge. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. Friends, that wraps up this week and this edition. To each of you who have lost loved ones in the defense of this country, thank you. May God bless you this weekend. And for the rest of you, may you ever be humble and thankful to God for those who've given their lives for our freedoms. Happy Memorial Day weekend to you. We'll see you next week here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action, For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.